Welcome to Synthaholics, your weekly shot of Star Trek. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me we have...
Aaron O'Brien!
Yeah!
Holly Michelle is here, too.
Yeah.
Yeah! And we get special guest Guy Davis. He's back. It's only been 3 episodes, and he's back.
I know. I hope you didn't forget about me.
Don't you forget.
Forget about me. Another song reference I didn't fuck up.
Yes!
Yeah!
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 Welcome, Guy. Welcome back to Synthaholics.
Why, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Yes, good to have you back. And we have more Discovery episodes to talk about. Dave and Holly, we got a little news on the Picard show.
Some nudes?
Yay.
On the Picard show.
Yeah, nudes. We got nude pictures of Picard in cast.
Oh, man.
So,
have you ever seen the show The Extras?
No.
Okay. Because there's this great thing where it's a show where they pick like British actors, but one of the British actors they pick is Patrick Stewart, uh-huh. and they make them do these weird things. And one of them is he's like, I've got this idea for a show where I'm like Xavier from, but every time I look at girls, their clothes fall off.
Oh, I saw that.
Oh, I have seen that.
Yeah.
That sounds brilliant.
And I was like, that's the first thing that came to mind.
Yeah, I mean, Xavier could do that anyway, though. I mean...
Well, that was the whole point, yeah.
To be fair, he could totally do that anyway.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's Charles Xavier.
Does.
So we just need to do... We need to put X-Men in Star Trek's Mirror Universe, where he's doing that all the time anyway.
Yeah, you're naked.
It's getting hot in here. He just plays that song and everyone does it.
So the news that I was going to tell you about, not the naked stuff.
Naked news. It's also a thing.
Naked news. So Alice Kurtzman was talking on, I guess it's called Paley Fest in L.A., and they had a Star Trek Discovery panel, and they said that Patrick Stewart was reading the new script at his kitchen table, and it was so great that he almost cried.
He spilled his coffee on it.
Oh, I was going to say, did he fall over laughing? But
you call that acting?
He needed Robert Kurtzman to come over and read it to him because his eyesight's failing.
Robert, I can't read this. That's basically it. They didn't say much about. They didn't reveal anything about the actual show. They said that it's going to be different than Discovery. They want to have different feeling.
It's going to be different than Discovery because it's going to be Renegades.
Yes, well, I guess. and I guess they will start filming in the Los Angeles area in April 15th.
Oh, wow, 2 weeks, or almost, by the time it's coming.
Yeah, it's coming right up.
Pretty
very,
soon.
Very soon.
So we'll get to see something by the end of the year, at least the trailer.
I think they want to bring it out.
By the end of the year.
By the end of the year, yeah. So
Spiffy.
We'll, Spiffy. Yeah, so that's that. And it's exciting, don't you think?
That is pretty cool.
It would be funny if he read from the script and then he's like, this is like the worst reading
ever. Didn't I see this in the Star Trek fan film somewhere?
Well, sadly, we had to let Patrick Stewart go. He just wasn't the right person for the job.
He can't play Picard anymore. He doesn't know
I don't think he could play the part.
We'll get James McAvoy to play Picard.
We'll get Jerry Lee Lewis.
Right.
Brett Spiner.
We'll get Godfrey to play the part.
Gilbert Godfrey.
That would be great.
Beat them over right now.
That's pretty good.
Raise shields.
I would pay money to see this. I want to see Gilbert Godfrey play every part in a Star Trek show.
Why?
It would just be so annoying. It'd be hilarious.
I can't.
I want to have like original Star Trek characters. He's playing all the characters. He's playing Scotty. He's playing Sulu. He's playing Uhura.
Are you sure that's not already like a Broadway show of him, God, like a one man
really
show?
I really want to see a one man Star Trek show with Gilbert Gottfried playing everyone.
Geordi.
Look to Broadway. There's got to be some off Broadway thing that he's been involved with where he's done something like that.
I just want to hear him trying to do a Scottish accent, his crazy voice.
I doubt he would even try.
He wouldn't even try. He would just go, I, Captain!
Hey, Captain!
Eject the warp core!
Eject the warp core!
Anyways.
Eject it out my rectum!
Oh my God. Well, there goes that news in the toilet. So, guys, we got a lot of revelations with this last episode of Star Trek Discovery.
Or did we?
Well, we got a little bit. Did we?
Or did we?
Yeah, so this episode we got Star Trek Discovery, The Red Angel. This is Season 2, Episode 10. Red Anvil, and it first aired on March 21st, 2019. And we start off with poor Arium going through memory erasure.
So, can't let anyone find us. Her floating around in a torpedo. Let's just delete it.
All that information's got to be taken out.
Control-delete.
Yeah, let's make sure that nobody finds out that she was walking on a beach with that guy.
Oh, yeah. Man, that's scandalous. Can't let that out. Why don't they just keep her brain in a jar somewhere, and that way they tap it if they need to. And it could become the brain of the Enterprise, like the Millennium Falcon and Solo. Oh, wait, sorry.
There you go. Abby something. Abby who?
Right.
Abby normal.
I didn't get to listen to any previous episodes of Synthaholics. I apologize.
Oh my God!
For this particular season, because my wife and I are still way behind on the episodes of where we, you know, so of course, as long as my child is in the room, we can't listen to anything that might have my child pick up spoilers that might have, because of course he's promptly going to go repeat it to
spoilers or the other things that we say.
Yes, that too.
Well, yeah, some of that stuff probably wouldn't go over as well either. And somebody we know, and I won't name any names, is on spring break right now. So he's been underfoot. It's actually, I had to like find a way to watch this episode without him. It was remarkably, uncomfortably weird to try to like, I'm sorry, I have to sneak off to watch Star Trek somewhere where you can't be.
I gotta take a big dump.
Right. It was really weird.
Who did you have to avoid? I was
his son, my 9-year-old.
Oh, I see.
Because A, he usually watches Star Trek with me, but Discovery's been off limits because it's not the world's most family friendly of all of the Star Treks.
This episode's better.
Really? Because eyeballs. That's all I gotta say, man.
Eyeballs. Hey, it was not the graphic at all.
Yeah, my kids saw that. They didn't flinch. They seen
I'm just saying.
New York parenting versus Colorado parenting.
I guess so.
Hey, you get something, get a stick in the eye, it happens. But yeah, you grow up.
This happens all the time, man.
Yeah. Curly, has he seen the Three Stooges?
You guys in New York, man, you guys live it rough.
We watch the Three Stooges. People get their eyes gouged out all the time on that show, and that was family friendly.
What do you think happened to Alpha? Boink.
It needs the Three Stooges noise. Boink! Wise guy, huh?
Wise guy.
That would be great if Leland got up. I was like, wise guy, huh?
No. Jesus.
So you had to sneak around your son to get this episode in. Hey.
So I didn't get to. I don't know if you guys were talking about Arium before, but and I didn't mean to interrupt this whole thing. But did everybody else feel like we just kind of like said, oh, we got to kill a character, but we don't want to kill any main characters. We'll
no.
That was Dave's take.
You should listen to Aerium.
I was like, they,
yeah,
they,
but nobody knows anything about Aerium, so we'll let's build a whole bunch of stuff around her.
And then kill her.
I loved her. I loved her.
She's a waste of a character.
Minimal lines, but she was in many shots.
Just because you're in shots doesn't mean you have a character.
Yeah, but we didn't know anything about her.
That's exactly my point.
Just because you're on a podcast doesn't mean you have a character, David.
I'm pretty sure they know my character if they've listened to the show. I'm pretty sure she
was on the show, so she is a character.
But she had no character.
I mean,
there's a difference between being a character and having a character.
Looking at all of the, like, if you look at the boards and everything like that, and just looking at, like, where we were, you know, on Reddit and all of these things, up until literally episode 9, we weren't even sure if she was human.
Right.
We didn't know anything about her.
We knew nothing about her. Yeah, it was, I don't know, it was a mess.
And so it was kind of like,
listen to last week's episode.
She could have been an android. She could have been, I mean, there was all kinds of stuff we didn't know about her.
She probably wasn't an android because Data was supposed to be the first, sort of.
Right. But I mean, but we were still speculating that.
But the show gave us no inclination. So that was basically my point last week.
The show gave us nothing to work with.
I droned on about it extensively last week.
Oh, this is the point where we've got to care about her. So they just like pulled it.
Yeah, that was Dave's takeaway.
It was like too little, too late. Don't try to pull heartstrings if you didn't give a crap about the character before now. That's sort of where I was,
and I mean, I felt really bad about that because I was really kind of aggravated about it. Now,
so
I think it turned out to be a wonderful episode because Frakes was in charge. I think that's really what pulled it out, was because Jonathan Frakes was in charge of it. It turned out to work really well because he's a good director.
He's a good director.
And because he's an awesome director, he managed to pull that one out.
Without too much lens flare either.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, he's our guy, man. Yeah. Frakes is totally our guy. Well,
Robert Kurtzman's on set with a flashlight shooting it in the camera, so you can't get rid of all the lens flare. But
it happened again this episode, too. It was really getting on my nerves.
Alex Kurtzman had two flashlights, one in each hand this time.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I don't mean to knock you there, Holly. I think that in balance, it was still an okay episode. There's nothing wrong with it, except that I feel like I think that they relied very heavily on Jonathan Frakes to pull that one out because they were coming up with, like, they had to really work hard.
I didn't make that point, Guy, about him pulling it out, but it's a very good point.
Well, anyways, let's go on with the story.
Okay.
All right.
Sorry, your
grievance has been acknowledged.
Has been logged. Can I log that grievance?
Yeah. Thank you, Guy, for backing me up.
Yeah, so we got the whole thing where they're downloading Aerium's, erasing her memories, downloading it, everything. And we got Tyler getting taken out of his quarters. He's out of house arrest anymore, so he's done with that.
Oh, guess it wasn't you. Sorry, our bad.
Guess we
trust
you again.
I'm so sorry. We locked you up.
They didn't look very sorry.
No. although Nan kind of looked at him like, you poor, poor man.
I don't know.
You poor, poor, two-dicked man.
I didn't get that. I just got the... Well, I guess we fucked up, but this is going to happen again, so beware.
Yeah. In about 3 episodes from now, we'll do this again.
Right.
Then we have the crews all in the shuttle bay, and they're giving their final eulogies to Aerium. We have Tilly and Stamets and everyone talking about their impacts that they have.
That she's made.
Yeah,
I don't believe any of them, honestly. But Saru had a pretty song he sang.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, Saru did sing a nice little song. And then we launched into space, like you do.
Like you do.
Like you do.
She didn't soft land on that planet.
Yes, the one that regenerates.
We all know what happens when you soft land on planets. Things don't go well.
You have to pawn far 16 times in a day and make this poor lady raw. Oh, wait, no.
All right, so going on to... Then on the turbolift, Tyler and Burnham have a couple words. And basically, you know, I think he's trying to get back in you know, the groove with Michael, and she's like, nah, I don't think so.
I will spurn you until it's not good to spurn
you. Until you turn into Apollo.
Yes. Spurn you until you turn. A lot of heavy Trek references tonight with you two.
I know. it's almost like this is a Trek cast or something.
I don't know. That's weird.
Hey, Trek cast, we're not affiliated with Trek cast. That's a different podcast. They won't let us post our stuff on their page anymore. It's fine. Go away.
It's fine. We're not angry. Then we jump to the ready room, and we have Pike, Saru, Burnham, Spock, and Cornwell, and they're all talking about how... So I think I was kind of vindicated because I said last episode that the artificial intelligence came from the future and infiltrated Section 31's control, and that's what they're suggesting too.
Mm-hmm.
I feel kind of good. 1 point for Aaron.
Well, that's good. I mean, they've done a terrible job at the show of explaining things, and they kind of step back. It was kind of hard to figure out what was going on, like, from what they were saying last week. And then they kind of clear things up the next episode. I feel like that's happened several times this season.
Oh, absolutely. There's a fear that the control artificial intelligence might have sent itself off that station. It might be dormant. So they have to be clear. I mean, they have to be watchful for that, I guess.
Vigilant.
Next is they also said the Section 31 ships are trying to run diagnostics, so make sure all that their systems are clean of the control.
Scotty's working overtime.
Yeah,
that's right.
Just cut to Scotty sweating profusely.
And this is where Tilly walks in to the door because they don't lock the door for senior staff meetings, apparently.
I like the way you worded that. She walked into the door.
Well, they open automatically. Yes. And stuff. That was actually an adorable Tilly line.
I know, but it was kind of weird that they don't lock the door for senior staff meetings.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyways, so she said that she found a strange code in Arium's system, and basically there was this file called Data, a Project Dataless, and you know, Burnham was like, that's the last word she said to me before she was sucked out the airlock. And she said, then she goes into the biosignature or a neural signature of the Red Angel, and it's Burnham.
Woo! Vindicated.
Yes. So it's Burnham who...
Sort of. That may or may not be actually vindicated, but it could still happen.
Right. So we get a shot on Michael going, what? And then...
we cut to the commercial that nobody watches.
Oh, God, those damn commercials. So dumb.
Commercials?
Yeah, we get commercials because I have the cheaper package.
Oh. Holly, you're welcome.
Yes. I was like, I don't understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, this is where I go out the room and do something.
I think in the first episode of season one, I couldn't handle it. I switched immediately. It was so annoying.
They are terrible. Next, we go to the sick bay, and Colbert apparently is back working again. And he said that, that's file that Arium had matches up completely with Michael Burnham. So
I don't trust Colbert for a second. He didn't realize Vok was a Klingon, so apparently he's not a good doctor. I don't trust anything he says. can he die again? I don't trust him.
He might.
He didn't say it's completely her. He said that the way it was phrased was like the genetic markers are so in sync that it's nearly impossible for it to not be Michael. It has to be Michael.
Yeah, because Cornwell was basically saying like it could have been put there as a red herring, you know, to put us off the trail. And they said, yeah, but you can't really fake that. Humans have too many like weird things going about there.
Yeah.
Cut down the mightiest tree in the forest with a herring. herring.
A red herring for that too. And then there's some great little banter back and forth between Spock and Burnham, how he's saying how she would, he says it's totally with her psychological profile that she takes on things that are totally out of her control. And
sharing that with the group.
Yes.
Gee golly. No one else has noticed this. That's kind of far-fetched.
And then Michael was like, well, if I knew about any of this, why wouldn't I say what I would know? And Spock says, maybe you have a penchant for the dramatic. So anyways, so there is that whole thing where they're trying to figure out why, how she gets her hands on this technology and how she becomes the Red Angel. So this is where we got to try to figure all that out. And this
she
is when
gets
we get
it from a mama.
My mama's side. I get it from my mama's side. So next
that,
we go
that
to
Red Angel booty.
We get we go to the next Section 31 ship. Leland and Giorgio beam aboard. You know, I gotta say,
and Discovery's not wanted anymore. Oh, that was convenient.
I gotta say, I am kind of tired of these two characters now. I'm like, can you guys stop beaming aboard every 5 minutes? Are you guys? Do you guys getting sick of Section 31 by now?
I
like Giorgio.
I like Giorgio too.
I like Giorgio a lot.
I don't know. Leland seems kind of like a waste, but.
Well, Leland's basically, he's set up to be the human punching bag.
Yeah.
Basically.
You know, he's that old, bloated bureaucrat that is a holdover from something, and they're going to use him as, you know, get the fuck out of the way, which we kind of do anyways. Well, so.
I don't have an issue with, I don't mind Section 31 being there. I just would wish they would, you know, tell us what's going on with Section 31 because it's super vague. The behind-the-scenes stuff, that video they put out a couple weeks ago, says, oh, it's a super secret organization. But in the show, everyone seems to know about it, so it's not super secret. So I wish there was, like, a connect between what they're saying about Section 31 and what they're showing about Section 31 because they don't jive. And I'm only sick of them as to the point where they're not explaining exactly like what's going on with them and why they're happening. I mean, there's lots of fan speculation and we've speculated, but speculation is meaningless, like we talked about earlier with Arium, because we didn't know because we weren't informed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not annoyed by them showing up as much as I'm annoyed by lack of information.
Their characters are just kind of wearing on me. They're just like keep showing up and it's like, what are you adding to the story so far?
It's the backdoor pilot. It's an entire backdoor season.
I guess, yeah.
It's like the Daredevil season 2, which was the entire season was basically a Punisher, pre-pilot for Punisher, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's the exact same thing here, pretty much.
Or Gary 7, Dave.
Ooh, Gary 7, yeah, maybe.
Anyways, so they have the little thing back and forth between them, between Leland and Cornwell and Giorgio, and they're basically Giorgio wants to have a little totalitarianism efficiency, and like Cornwell looks at her like, you shut up. Anyways, and then we go back from there, we get back in the ready room, and they start kind of declassify basically everything they know. They kind of show their cards for everything. So they find out that this.
We built the Red Angel suit. Sorry, guys.
Sorry, we never told you. Sorry.
How was Section 31 that advanced?
And apparently there's a time crystal.
Crystal? That time crystal is actually a reference also back to
the Harry Mudd episode.
Yeah, the Harry Mudd.
Yes, but time crystal? What is that? Can't they call it something else?
No. We have to reference the Harry Mudd episode, time crystal.
Yeah, the prophets actually, gave it to us. That makes total sense. I'm okay with that one. I didn't have a problem with time crystal.
It's like a dilithium crystal, except it's running out of time. It's quartz.
It's quartz. They just should call it quartz. That'd be fine.
It's a very rare type of quartz.
I got to watch quartz.
We all accepted Sanus Man, so you know we're okay with time crystal.
I guess
quartz.
Anyways, moving. So they just Section 31 had developed a Project Daedalus, and this was a kind of retaliation. I guess 20 years ago, the Klingons were researching time travel, and they were afraid that the Klingons were going to go back in time and wipe out humanity before they walked out of the primordial soup.
And Tyler, we probably would have. That's not very warrior race like. That's very cowardice.
Yeah, we would have done that. So there was a temporal arms race, Dave.
Dun dun dun! Temporal Cold War. Woo.
Maybe.
Bring it on.
So we got all that information, and they they know, Section 31 now knows that they believe that Michael is the Red Angel. So they're clued into that as well. So what they're going to do is they're going to build a mousetrap using the technology that they know that the Red Angel uses, and they're going to lure it someplace to trap it. Now they just have to figure out how to bring the Red Angel out. So that's the next thing they're going to do. So Stamets is going to work on the actual trap itself. And I guess they're going to look at Saru and Leland are going to figure a way to close the wormhole. So that's
kind of a graviton beam that their ship is better capable of shooting out than Discovery, since Discovery doesn't have special technology in it. Yay!
And then we get a quick exchange between Giorgio and Burnham, and basically she wants to know more about what's happening, because she's like, my life's at stake here. I want to know what's happening. And she says, go talk to Leland.
Give me the deets.
Yeah. And she goes, go talk to Leland. Then we go to engineering, and we have this weird interaction between Stamets, Tilly, and Giorgio, and Culber.
Yeah, that one was really weird. I don't know what that was about.
I didn't either.
Apparently pansexuality is the new gay, so everyone's pansexual now, and it's awesome.
It happens again later on in the episode, too. So I too, am curious why she's invested in them.
She's intentionally trying to spur this relationship to be together by taunting them. And I don't know what that's all about.
Yeah, I don't either. But apparently in her universe...
She's up with both of them.
Yeah, her and Stamets and Poppy apparently all slept together.
Yeah, a threesome. Yeah, everyone in their universe is pansexual. That makes sense. Kira wants to fuck herself, so, I mean...
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, I mean... That was a given from Deep Space Nine. We got that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
loud and clear.
I guess they had DEFCON levels of fun. So that's how it was put out there.
It was funny.
Something about that felt more like Giorgio was attempting to put them back together. Something about the way that was set up.
So she's like the matchmaker?
Yeah, well, yeah, like
matchmaker.
The way it was set up was like she was intentionally trying to make Culber jealous so that Culber would get back with Stamets.
You know he's gay, right? I'm like, so
exactly.
It was such a weird
man. You don't mess with my man.
It was such a weird exchange. It was.
I don't know. There was something really weird about that, but it seemed like that was what was going on.
And can I just say...
So Stamets can't tell everyone what his preference is. He's got to have his ex-boyfriend tell him about his preference.
I do. That's like strange. Some of the things like Giorgio was like, you know, he says, your other version of yourself was far less neurotic. He says, have you tried medication?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I got the idea that... I wasn't offended by the comment, you know, he's gay. I thought that was more along the lines of, I felt like that was kind of like a
back off bitch.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly.
Well, I wasn't offended. It just seems like weird that like Stamets can't speak for himself. That was more like, huh, that's kind of weird.
Which I think was her point. I think that was where she was going, was she was trying to spur on Culber.
Well, and also you got to figure she's hasn't reacted with these characters too often in this version of the universe. So remember, we had, you know, Captain Killy from before in first season. So Tilly is nothing like Captain Killy, and the other Stamets we didn't really get that much, but he seemed different. So who knows?
Lorca said they were similar enough, though.
Yeah. And so the other thing that we find out that to generate the power, they need 12 warp cores to hold this Red Angel into place or what have you. So they have this place on it's called Esau 4 and has Deridium there. And apparently that's a great way they can make create plasma reactors and create that kind of power.
Okay.
I don't know.
Works for me.
So after the crazy exchange, Giorgio goes off to tell Pike to go to Esau 4. Just a little observation for me. Culber's walking around like in like a nice suit.
GQ style
suit, which is fine. You know, he hasn't been reinstated.
Civvies.
Which I'm cool with, but, you know, he's like, you know, I'm walking around handsome man. And the other thing is, Spock
he's
is going to
walk
around
into a different set and shoot different scenes. You didn't have time
to
change.
Yeah, maybe he does. But Spock is walking around in, like, he's not in his uniform. And he
hasn't shaved.
He hasn't shaved.
Come on. Like, he doesn't have time to shave. Like, I'm so vexed by this problem.
I'm still bothered by the not shaved thing, too.
I get not shaving when you're in an insane asylum, when you're like, your thoughts are messed up. He's been sane for, what, 3 episodes now? Like, he's got his mind back. Like, why? I don't know. It's strange.
Just little things like that I've been kind of noticing. Like, why are they doing that? And also, Section 31's uniforms make no goddamn sense whatsoever. So...
Spank me. That's why.
They're just S&M suits. Next, we get a quick scene between Nan and Burnham in the hallway, and they kind of have like a kiss and make up moment where they're not like hating on each other because, you know, Burnham probably held it against Nan that she blew Arium out.
Thanks for flushing the robot. I couldn't do it. It was too big for the hole.
I thought that was probably good. They needed to put a lampshade on that somewhere along the line.
Let me ask this. Like, guy, you bricked it up. Like, why add that on? Why not just put that in a scene sometime when they're working together? You know, like, why don't it be like, hey, just like the time you blew Arium out, it's like, you know, I did that because I had to, you know, that kind of thing. Like, why not do something like to raise the tension? But instead, they're just like, we ever notice that something bad happens the episode before, like Tyler and Pike. And then they have a kiss and make up moment later.
Well, it's the same thing in the second to last episode of Discovery, season one, where Stamets and Ash, you know, ran across each other, and they had to take this moment to like talk about the thing. Where it just didn't make sense. It just felt like it was inserted there. It didn't seem natural. Discovery does that a lot to kind of like just make strange little plugins. It would have been like kind of like crazier if it happened this season instead of last season. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Just. I mean, do you feel the same way, guy, or is that...
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, it just feels grafted in there. Like, we just have to throw a scene in.
I do kind of feel like this episode... this is a light episode. Like we were talking about before, the two episodes that have the word light in them were kind of, like, weirdly assembled. And I'm kind of feeling the same way about this one. Like, a whole bunch of pieces were, oh, we got to put all the pieces together because we got to... tie up a whole bunch of loose ends. So we're going to have funeral and we're going to have this piece. We're going to have that piece. We're going to put all this in here. We're going to do all this. And we're going to do all that. So yeah, I feel like, oh, and real quickly, let's make sure we have this scene where they make up and say it's okay. And she's not mad. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I feel like I agree with you. I feel like it was necessary. I mean, we needed to put a lampshade on that, but I completely agree. They could have put that on anywhere else.
Yeah, just like, let's do a quick hallway scene. Like, I don't know. It didn't make or break anything, but kind of weird pacing sometimes, I guess. But
the
I guess
whole
maybe
season to me is paced awful.
It's not awful. It just does weird, jaunty things
sometimes.
Well,
it's just like season one flowed better-ish. Magic the Santa Span Go Mad kind of took me out of it a little bit because it was a bottle episode and nothing to do with anything really. But season one, I think it felt like it did a better. Well, I've been enjoying season two better. I feel like season one told a story better, whereas season two is like stop, start, stop, start, stop, start, stop, start. It's kind of annoying.
Yeah, we've got these patch episodes where they've got to like assemble stuff and bring us back to the story piece. Like, oh, we've got to do all this stuff and bring us around to all the, like, pieces. It feels like that.
It's just jarring, and it's not smooth at all. I don't know if it's part of the shakeup with the writers changing, but I feel like it's been happening all throughout the season, even before the official changeover. So I don't know. Generally, season two is better than some of the parts. When you look at them as the parts, when you step back, it's messy.
It's got a up and down flow.
I mean, this scene doesn't like make or break the episode. I thought it was kind of like just thrown in. So next we jump into we got the science lab and Sru and Leland, And they're having a little back and forth about how the ship's going to close the wormhole. And then he's sort of like, what did Pike put you there just to, you know, keep an eye on me? And he's like, no, I want to just assess you myself. And it's funny because all of a sudden Saru stands up and he's like, he's towers over Leland. And
he should have pulled out his spiky things in his head.
And he was sort of just like, you know, Section 31's had some questionable practices, and he wanted to see if his friends and crewmates would be at risk and if that he can be trusted. And so then there was a kind of a little standoffish moment between the two. And then Michael walks in and says, hey, you know, I got to ask Leland some questions, some personal questions.
Scoot, Saru, scoot.
So, and then we have basically Leland telling Michael that his parents were involved with Project Daedalus, and that there's mother and father were on that planet when the star was going to go supernova. And the idea was that they stole they found the time crystal on a black market in an Orion outpost. And it was, I guess it had been stolen from Kronos. And she thought it'd be a great way to hide it on this planet. But apparently the Klingons found it. And his parents were in Burnham's parents were in jeopardy, and they died. And this is where Burnham just punches him twice in the face, once for his mom, once for her dad.
I didn't like that part. I don't know why I felt that. I mean, even though
it felt un-Star Trek.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. It felt very un-Star Trek.
Well, the only thing is, like, I get why she would do it. That's not a problem. But the other side is, like, Leland's supposed to be, like, this master spy guy, and he just
takes, like, punches.
That's all. He's like, I'm a human punching bag.
Well, but, I mean, beyond it sounding not Star Trek, it also feels super cliche. Like, the, like Burnham telling Spock that he's a freak to try to protect them. It's just very cliche, overdone.
Traditional.
You have to acknowledge, though, that Leland, while kind of a monster, you can see that he feels remorse for it. And when that happens in real life, you allow those that you've hurt to hurt you because you feel you deserve it. Yeah, so he'll take
in agreement
the
with
punches.
That.
I'm
totally in agreement with that, Holly. I'm on board with that piece.
I agree, and I understand it.
He would accept it. I just don't know if I liked the idea that Burnham did it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think if I had written the scene, I would have had Burnham, like, look at him and say, you know what? I ought to hit you, but I'm not gonna, or something like that. You know what I mean? Well, or something like that. Yeah. Maybe not like that sounded like really third grade, but something not third grade, you know,
something along those lines. I mean, I agree something, I don't know. It's just, it didn't feel right.
The way I interpreted it was when you saw the switch, the emotional switch, you saw it on her face.
I loved that.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
The way I see it is he was the reason why she was raised by logic over feeling. And at that moment, she was able to give into her feeling rather than logic.
Yeah. And to Sinequa Martin Green, oh my God. I mean, that was a beautifully acted part. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, you read everything across her face.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, as much as I hated what they did to Michael Burnham's character in that moment, what the way the actor played that part, oh my goodness, that was gorgeous.
She emotes very well.
She does a wonderful job.
She does. Every time, from shock to anger to, you know, complete feeling despair, she emotes that very well on her face.
I agree. Oh, yeah. It's basically the Janeway problem. Kate Mulgrew's fantastic actress. They just don't write goodly for her.
Goodly?
Goodly. I'm trying to come to their level of writing or speaking, so they don't write goodly enough.
Well, anyways, so he gets his ass handed to him, and like you said, I don't know if it was Holly or Guy was like, you know, kind of like he lays on the floor. He's like, yeah, I had that coming to me.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I think he knew he had it coming one way or the other.
Yeah.
That's why he probably didn't get up. That's probably why he just kind of just like, yep, I'll stay down.
I'm just going to lay here for a minute. That's okay.
Next, Burnham runs to Tyler and is like, did you know that Leland caused my father's death? And he was like, no, I didn't know. And then he's like, you know, she kind of says, I kind of like the idea, and I feel the same way, is she says, you know, you're known by the company you keep by Section 31. And Tyler's like, well, we do good things too. We do good things too. You know, it's like, no matter who pays the price. And then she storms off. And Tyler's like, screwed up with the wrong group.
I mean, that happens in the military too, not just, I don't know, it's overdramatic.
It is overdramatic.
It was overdramatic, but I mean, this is a dramatic presentation, so.
And
I don't know, I didn't find that to be a problem.
It didn't, me either. I kind of agree with her, how she was kind of, like I said, you know him by the company you keep kind of thing, so. Culber comes to Admiral Cornwell to do a little therapy moment,
which I thought was kind of cool.
Am I gay?
Anyway, so Culber is basically confused because he's not him anymore, and he's a new Culber. And she says, basically, you know, had some good points. She goes, you know, remember, you know, love is making a choice every day to love somebody.
Yeah.
So, and then secondly, it says you have to, if you're going to walk a new path, you have to start walking on it. You know, is to start walking that new road. So
moonwalk on it though.
Yeah. Anyways. So we have that little moment, and then we jump over to, Burnham's punching, a boxing, dummy.
Leland.
And,
wait, no.
Boxing
actual dummy this time.
Yes. And Spock walks in and they have a little chat. And, you know, Spock says, hey, you know, all the stuff that you said to me before, you know, you were a kid. You were trying to process the death of your parents, something even adults can't seem to do if they're, you know, presented with that tragedy. So, you know, this is, you know, how I forgive you, basically. Mm. So. For what the things that happened between us. So,
and to be fair, this isn't the first time that the writers have sort of overplayed the children. I mean, realistically, you know, Spock has been like an idiot as a child numerous times. Every time we seem to go back in time to see what Spock was like as a kid, he's always dumb. I can't
make the puzzle work, Sarek.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like every time we go back to anybody's childhood, they're always stupid.
How do I make the cow toe work?
Right. Well, or driving a stupid Corvette off of a cliff or whatever. I mean, it's like we never seem to be able to get any of the Star Trek characters straightened out as children. They're always like seriously overwrought and weird. It's like they're kind of strangely two-dimensional. It's like nobody was ever a child, or nobody has kids who write scripts.
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe that could be a thing. Yeah,
because I mean, it's like I don't know. So the fact that the whole concept is based around Michael Burnham doing something really, really flat and two-dimensional as a child is, well, okay. Maybe nobody just has kids.
It might be. But yes, but then they jump into, she goes, well, by the way, I didn't come here to talk to you about all this. So what did you want to come here to tell me? Says, I figured out why the Red Angel keeps appearing. He's like, why? Says, because it's of you. Every time you're in danger, that's when it shows up. So then they devise a plan. They go to Pike and Cornwall and they kind of just go through it, say, basically every time Burnham's in trouble, if it was on the Hiawatha or Terralysium,
Vulcan.
All these times on Vulcan, the Red Angel shows up when she's in danger. So this must be she's the one that triggers it. And Spock's like, it's the grandfather's paradox. So all we have to do is put Michael Burnham in danger and she will come and rescue herself.
You know, I was talking about the grandfather paradox. I guess it would have been the grandmother paradox an episode or two ago.
Right. I have an issue with this, and I will get into it later, yes. But it's glaringly obvious if you think about it. So they go to SL4 and they are going to set up this mouse trap. Apparently there's a carbon monoxide atmosphere and it has some chemical dust in there that's also not good for humans. They're going to lure it there and they're going to suffocate Michael down on there. So the angel shows up, and once she's the angel's in the trap, they can shut the wormhole down and trap the angel. So Dr. Kolber will be there to resuscitate her if she needs to, if it gets that bad.
Can we get Dr. Pollard?
Please. Anyways, so, and then we have a brief moment with Burnham and Tyler in the quarters, and this is where we see the kiss. So she's obviously just scared, and reasonably so. You know, she's putting her life on the line, and she didn't want to leave things between them how she left it before. So when she yelled at him and ran away.
Less pouty, more kissy.
More kissy. And then we get on the bridge while they're getting things set up. We have Lieutenant Nielsen enters the bridge and takes Arium's place. Now, Nielsen is actually played by Sarah, I think it's Mitic. And she played Arium in the first season, but not the second season.
Right, which is kind of interesting.
Yes.
I was curious about that, actually.
Yeah, so, but she didn't play her the first time, so, I mean, and in the second season, so. Mm-hmm. And I guess she's popped up a couple of times in different scenes during Discovery, mm-hmm. So.
Oh, yeah, probably. I thought I'd read somewhere that Nan was the original Arium, but I guess I read that wrong somewhere.
Yeah. No,
it's her, and then.
So it's funny. It's funny. Arium's replacement is Arium.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, Hannah Chessman?
Yeah. Yeah, she's anyways. But it's kind of funny that she's like, oh, I don't have to wear makeup this season now. Yay! And we won't want anything about her either, probably.
Yeah, we don't know anything about her. It'd be kind of weird if they treat her bad.
Maybe because, season five or six will learn something about her. And then they'll kill her in the same episode. Then,
yeah, right. As soon as we learn anything about it, well, she'll die.
I have a rock collection in my quarters.
You're dead. You're dead to me.
Oh! They kill her.
I play the trombone. Do no.
She's dying. Once they find like a little thing about
any
them,
hint of her. Personality, then she die.
Yeah. I love kittens. She'll die. All right. So
I have a tramp stamp. She's dead.
Jesus. So we go back to their, they're setting everything up, and we have the whole idea of that they put Michael into the chair, and she has this like moment where like, what if this doesn't work? And Spock goes, then I'll get blamed for killing another officer.
Yay.
That was like, a good line.
She could. She's like,
yeah, it was kind of, it was very Spock.
It yeah. was very Spock. And Spock's I felt like funny. This episode, I felt like it was the Spock we expected. This I feel episode.
Like Spock is finally Spock-like Spock. This episode. Took a couple
well,
episodes.
I mean, he was out of his mind.
Yeah, to be well, fair.
He was in his mind last episode and still wasn't very Spock-like.
Well, he had to get into it. Give him time.
Well, they open the windows.
Gotta break it in.
They open the windows and the atmosphere starts flooding in and Burnham starts screaming. And
the whole bridge crew has an HD feed watching her suffer and die.
I gotta say, this was a pretty grueling
that was pretty brutal.
It was hard to watch a little bit. I mean, the acting against Nico Marcarini's acting is phenomenal, but it's just like, why is it getting an HD thing? Everyone's watching her suffer. Starfleet's a bunch of masochists or sadists. They're sadists.
They did it when Kirk fought the Gorn, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but true. Kirk didn't get hurt nearly as bad as that.
Yeah, it's true. Anyway, so while that's happening, everyone's losing their nerve. And they're all like, let's pull the plug on this.
Spock's like,
and
no.
Spock's like, no. And then she, at some point, I couldn't even make it out, but he said that she yelled out variants. Yeah. And I'm like,
I don't give a damn what she said. She could have said cheese sandwich, and I wouldn't. wouldn't make a difference.
Pull the plug. So anyways, Spock pulls his phaser, and he's like, nope, you are not going in and Pike, stopping.
Pike orders him to stop. He's like, nope.
And he said, nope. My sister's going to die.
My sister must die. And, this has been my plan all along, ever since we were 5 years old.
And just finally, I can do this legally. And at that moment, we have tachyon radiation spike, and then we have...
Well, Michael's been dead for at least 5 seconds when they realize the tachyons.
Yes. Or if she's not dead, she's like as close to there as she's going to get.
I'm pretty sure she died, that's when the Red Angel shows up, after she's kind of dead, because the Red Angel revives her with the resurrection beam that apparently Section 31 also made.
Yes.
And, Section 31's into all kinds of really cool technology.
Yeah,
that no one's allowed to know about.
So, yeah, the Red Angel does show up, and Leland is going to some special room to close down the wormhole.
If you have an erection longer than 4 hours, please seek a Red Angel.
Yes. And it's really weird. So he removes the security thing, and then it stabs him in the eye.
I'm not sure what that was about.
And then...
Stabbing him in the eye.
It stabs him in the eye, and he falls over looking dead. And then all of a sudden, a voice comes, says, "Tyler, you have power you need now." And then you can close the wormhole. So
it sucks power through his eyeballs.
I don't know what that's about, but yeah, that seemed fishy. So something happened there. Something.
The control might have done that.
Yeah, maybe.
I think that was control.
It could have been.
Yeah.
I'm controlling your eyesight by making it bad.
It could be a cybernetic injection of some kind of tech. You know, he had a line in the beginning of the episode that was, I don't want any more infiltration or virus or whatever the phrase he used.
Cheesecake.
And I think it was more of an implant rather than a murder, because it didn't go very far into the eye, and you can't, if it doesn't go too far, you can live. So I think he'll live. If we're just going on the set, the needle was not very bloody. He shouldn't be dead.
It's actually a really great theory, and that might actually be what's happening here. So the control took over Leland. So after they close the wormhole, Tyler closes the wormhole from the Sector 31 ship. Then down on the planet, the Angel is brought down by some force beams of some sort, and then they shoot off an EMP, which disables the suit.
And it kicks it out.
And they put a shield around them, and the suit opens up, and someone stumbles out of it. And who is it? Mom?
Mama dear.
So it was...
Her mom.
It was her mom.
Your mom.
Her mom.
It's your mom. You can tell your mom jokes now.
Oh, we were totally...
Your mom was so red, she an angel.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that ends up this episode. Guy, your guess. What did you think of this episode?
I feel like it was patched together. I mean,
there's a lot going on in this episode. There's a lot.
Yeah. I feel kind of like... Yeah, I feel like I've been brought in on all the patched-in episodes. I feel like I'm always kind of like... ragging on the
make
episodes.
It work. Make it I don't work. Mean it.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. My feeling on this is that it wasn't a bad episode. I mean, I don't think that it's necessarily a horrible episode. I felt like it was interesting and intriguing, but I'm still kind of smarting over Arium. You know, I feel like they just like beamed her in just totally so that they could wipe her out. And I'm like, oh man. And now they're still kind of rolling on that. You know, it's like, hey, and let's do some other stuff with that. And I'm like, oh, man, come on, guys. Right. But then we had all these other threads that were rolling with this. And I'm like, phew. So I don't know. I give it like a C+ on a scale.
C+. Oh, interesting. Yeah. I didn't think you'd give it that low, but all right.
Yeah, I'm kind of – well, and looking at the critical response, it's the lowest one so far on Rotten Tomatoes.
Really?
Of all of them, yeah. It's rolling in at 60%, which is positive review on this episode, which is the lowest one of the season. So this one's not coming in as well. I don't know. I wonder if I'm feeling like – I kind of feel like the reveal was interesting, being that it was their mom, her mom – But I feel kind of like, I guess there's a couple of things. One, I'm glad it was her mom, for one, because my first thought was Spock's totally right. If this whole thing is a plan to get Burnham to save things, you know, save the world, then this is like the most backwards way to do it. You know, you could just come back in time. Burnham could come back in time and say, hey, Burnham, your bank account number is 1234567. I'm really you. Save the world.
Yeah, right. You know what I mean? Exactly.
Come on.
This is what you need to do.
Truly Burnham, there's like better ways to do it. So being that it's her mom wouldn't know her bank account number or whatever. So there's no way to secretly know it. So I could see at least it's a little bit more plausible that we've got this like obscure, really weird, over the top kind of bizarre way of doing things. So that's kind of cool. I like that. But I also feel like it's kind of shambly. The episode's like all over the place, right, everywhere. The director is a good director, and we've had her before, so I'm pleased with that. Because like this one's rolling well because of that. This is Hanel Culpepper, who's going to be leading out Picard's season.
Picard
episode.
Right.
And she's totally good at this stuff. And so, again, I feel like this is being pulled out by the director. So, I don't know. C+, yeah. Maybe a B-. I don't know. Right there. Mm-hmm. Right in that line.
Okay.
That's where I am.
Who wants to go next?
Holly.
Okay. Well, I did want to just remark that it was interesting that last episode they had someone unexpectedly taken from them, but this episode they had to voluntarily kill someone. I thought that was interesting. And
And then when I think it came in full force when that Lieutenant Nelson walked in and they were like, oh yeah, she died and someone else took her place and this might happen again.
Yeah. I thought that was I thought that was worth noting.
And nicely done.
Nicely done, yeah. Also, I don't know if you guys are going to believe me, but when Culver was discussing the DNA similarities in the lab, I had the thought that perhaps it was a relative. And it wasn't anything, like, there wasn't, I don't know why, but it was just something in the way he worded it. And I think I kind of mentioned that in the beginning of this episode, how it was his phrasing that wasn't, like, it wasn't like it is 100% Michael. It's like there's no, this can't be faked. Like, it's her DNA. This is happening. And I don't know. For some reason, I just felt like it could have been a relative. And then for some reason, when Michael was talking with Leland, I had the thought that, oh man, I wonder if her parents are still alive. But I didn't make the connection at that time, like, oh, it could be her mom. But I did have the thought of like, huh, I wonder if they're still alive.
Yeah, you're pretty good. You're pretty good intuitively to see things that, you know, like those little intricacies. So, like you said, like I bet you're right. I bet you that Leland has got control AI controlling him after next episode.
Mm-hmm. So, well, maybe.
I'm curious.
What was I wrong? I was wrong about something. I was, you know, the whole Spock thing. I really loved the conversation that Spock and Michael had. But I've come to the conclusion that I was not correct and there was no weird sibling.
I'm still devastated thing by this.
That there's not?
Yes. It would have made it way more interesting than, oh, I called him names when I was 7.
Yeah.
I don't know. I agree, but it's kind of gross, too. So.
It is.
It's gross. But I mean, like, okay, maybe we could find some happy middle ground. But what they did was way less interesting than what we were proposing.
Mm.
Just saying.
I am terrified to find out what you guys were proposing, but
Game of Thrones. When we watched the first episode, there was a, you know, this season on Discovery, and I swear I saw Michael kiss Spock, and David thought
it was Tyler.
It was Tyler, and I, you know, the image that I have in my head was like a white background, not this bluish background that we had in this episode. So I don't know. Maybe it's still to come. Who the fuck knows? But I theorized that the reason why Michael and Spock were no longer having any kind of relationship was because Michael either fell in love with Spock or challenged him and tried to wake some kind of emotion from him and kissed him, and that pissed him off. And that was my theory from episode one.
Ah.
So that's not what happened.
We thought there was a little incest going on.
Yeah.
Some ponfaring.
I was kind of grossed out by it, but it was like, well, you know,
it could happen.
That would be a good reason.
Yeah.
Be pissed off? Yeah, of course.
It would be great. It would have been interesting versus like, oh, I called you names and then I did the cliche thing.
Yeah. But,
okay.
So yeah, I don't think that's the case anymore. The memory I have, I mean, I could always watch the first episode again and then see this season on Discovery and see if I'm remembering it correctly. But yeah, the scene that I remember was kind of more like the cafeteria where it was like, white.
Yeah.
And Michael and Spock kissed and David was like, damn it, we saw Michael kissing Volk Ash and I fucking hate him and I want him to die. And I was like, I don't think that was Volk. Like, I really think that was Spock. So I don't know. But though, you know, I really did like I liked seeing Spock again, like actual Spock.
I agree.
It's funny. My mom has not watched any of Discovery except last week's episode. And she was like, that's not Spock. And it's so funny because like we're watching it and my mom was, you know, back in the day, she was a Trekkie and she's like, well, something happened to Spock and we never really knew what it was. And this could be the thing that made him the way he is. And I was just looking at her like, okay, mom.
Yeah.
And she was like, I don't like this Spock. This is not Spock.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same way. I mean, I don't like the emotional outburst these Vulcans keep having. It's really frustrating.
So, yeah, I think that's pretty much all I had. You know, I'm kind of disappointed that I didn't think that it really was her mom. But, you know, whatever.
Whatever.
Hey, Ron. Yeah.
This episode wasn't terrible. I don't know if I gave a C, maybe a B, but I think it more of it was just so much was cobbled together at once, and they keep on trying to put too much in one episode. And yeah, you can do it, but you don't let the scenes breathe at all. You know, they're just so tightly edited, and you know, you're in and out, and so I had a little bit of an issue with that. The big issue I had with this was, how do you trap your future self without your future self knowing that you're going to trap you?
Right.
That makes no sense.
I kept thinking that over and over and over too.
It's like if you're going to trap your past self, that's easy because your past self doesn't know what's going to happen. But if you already know that you set up a trap, that you're going to have some kind of way to get around it. So I was just like, that is just silly.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking the Red Angel, if she's the Red Angel, the Red Angel should just show up before they do any of this to save them some time to tell them what's going on. But it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, kind of for a moment, I thought it may have been Giorgio, Red Angel.
Second, I thought so too.
Yeah, her shifty eyes and her, you know, questions, and always concerned for Michael. I was like, huh. Maybe it could be Giorgio. So when the mask came off, I was like, is it Giorgio? And it wasn't.
Yeah. It just was, to me, it's just a silly concept. You know, it's the grandfather paradox. Like, well, yeah, but if your grandfather knows you're coming after him, you know, it doesn't make any sense. So, whatever. I mean, I think that's a huge plot hole in my mind, but I guess I can just let it go. But I think it's kind of crappy writing.
Yeah. I got to admit, that was something, you know, I thought, well, maybe I'm just tired. Maybe, you know, maybe I'm just tired. But
I'm just too cynical on life.
Maybe I'm too cynical. But I had thought that, too. I thought, well, wouldn't I know if we tried to capture me?
Yeah, right.
Hey, Aaron. Remember back in 2019 when we tried to trap you?
Yes,
good times.
That was a good time. Boy, if I had a time machine, I would have got myself out of that real easy.
Yeah.
Man, that was a crazy
problem. We tried to reverse the polarity in the Wurzen flapping, and we beat the Bloopum blopping, and boy, it worked really well, too. You were stuck.
You know.
You'd never get out of that, would you, Aaron?
No. Yeah,
if it's truly Michael's mother, then cool. I'm interested. But you know, a lot of daughters look like their moms, and it could be an aged Michael.
Mm.
You know, we don't
That's
know.
That's true too.
Yeah.
Although she did look remarkably different in some ways. Like she looked a little lighter than Michael, and she looked a little more Asian. But I couldn't. You know.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was very fast. I only saw her face for a moment. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is the neural scan that they did, that Arium they got, and it matched up with Michael.
Mm-hmm.
So are they saying that the neural scan, which is exact, which is Michael, you know?
But again, it's not.
It could still be Michael.
I watched the episode twice just to make sure that I wasn't crazy. It's not exact. It's just very hard to fake the similarities, is basically what Culver says.
Well, it could still be Michael.
Yeah.
If Michael got in that suit after this moment and starts going back in time, then it could be her.
Yeah.
But still freaking weird. So, yeah. So anyways, that's where I'm at. Dave.
Yeah. As far as Michael being the Red Angel, I still think she is the Red Angel because Michael has to have a way to get the suit because it was a Section 31 suit and it was lost during the Klingon attack. So her mom gets the suit. Her mom goes to the future, finds out when Michael dies. Michael dies by being suffocated by Spock and all these other people. She goes back and stops that from or gets there just in time to revive her because the suit's got a reviving ray. Or maybe she can't revive her and she goes further into the future to install a reviving ray. She gets that and saves Michael at that point in time. And then Michael can go back and do all the rest because all the times the Red Angel interacted with Michael, it doesn't make sense that it's her mom because I guess she could find out, but it just makes more sense for it to be Michael because tracking down exactly where Michael was all those times just seems like a lot of extra work
for someone to do. So far in the future that you have historical records.
Yeah, but you also have to – the historical records don't matter unless they've already kind of happened. The time travel gets all circular really fast with, like, what happened first. So I definitely think it could be the Red Angel. Or, this is a little bit more far-fetched of a theory, Michael was the Red Angel. She died because they created a variance, and so someone else had to become a new Red Angel, so there's a new timeline that's been established. Although, for Michael to get the Red Angel shoot, she would have to get it from her mom in the first place. So,
she might after this episode.
It very well could still be Michael as the Red Angel, and they just did this mom's twist so that she could get the suit. And so it may not even be a twist. It just maybe just be the natural step on how Michael gets the suit. So that's kind of my input there. Otherwise, I felt like this episode was kind of a waste of time because because of what Aaron was saying. It's like, well, if she knows she's going to die, shouldn't she just, like, you know, just come back and fix it before they go and kill her, you know? That part, so that's the part though I thought it was a waste of time, or like just, I don't know, just not. I didn't even watch this episode a second time this week because I was kind of annoyed by it because it just feels like they're so many things are just getting thrown away. So they made Discovery and everyone on it a fugitive two episodes ago, and then that's resolved, and like they barely even mentioned it again. And it's just kind of like, what? Why throw out all these plot points and then just resolve them seconds later? It makes more sense not to even bring them up. It's kind of like season one where they destroyed all the spores with a magical virus, only to have a whole episode where they create more spores. It's like they're creating a problem so they can have an episode to fix the problem, but you would serve the story better by telling the story and not making problems to waste an episode on them fixing.
I mean, it's a story arc. Sometimes you have episodes where you don't feel like it mattered, or that it was just kind of like a gap. You know, I was just saying this to somebody else. Like, they're a lot less episodic than traditional Star Trek. It's more story arc, and I know you think it's the Michael Burnham show.
It is the Michael Burnham show.
It's the Michael Burnham show.
I don't know.
I guess my feeling is I don't have a I think I agree with Holly on this one that, you know, it's episodic and that makes sense. My problem really is that I feel like, oh, hey, you know, we've only got 14 episodes to work with here because we're doing this. We can do this in 14 episodes. And we don't have to do 26 episodes. but then they still have like 26 episodes worth of stuff sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. This could have benefited from being – I felt this way about the other – you know, the Point of Light and Light and Shadows. I felt like those two episodes really could have stood to be two episodes. You know, separate them out.
Or use your online streaming service as a platform to bend the rules. You're not on TV. You don't have to fit into an hour time slot with commercials.
It doesn't have to be 42 minutes. We were discovering this with Umbrella Academy on Netflix. Like every episode is over the place as far as time, right? Some episodes are an hour and – yeah, they are. They're really good. But some episodes are like an hour and 10 minutes, and some episodes are like 52 minutes, and the next episode's like an hour long. And I mean, it's like none of them are the same length. And it's because it's on Netflix. Who cares?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. It really doesn't.
Yeah, I agree. They should definitely – that's my complaint from last season too. They just rushed so much stuff, and it just seemed like a lot of stuff didn't matter this episode. I don't know. They only have 14 episodes, and they're wrapping things up without
– We've got four more episodes.
Yeah, we do.
Four more hours basically.
Four more – yeah. I don't know.
I might miss the last episode.
No!
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, I might be able to do it, but it's going to be in Michael's leave block.
Yeah, it's going to suck. Mm.
I'm sure I'll be able to do it. It'll be fine.
Life finds a way.
I think this is probably my least favorite episode of the season.
Michael becomes Kang the Conqueror from Marvel Comics.
I don't know. I just don't have a lot to say other than like I agree with Aaron about the Red Angel thing, and it still could be Michael. There could be a couple different explanations. If it's all gonna be like, if it turns out that Michael is the Red Angel and everything that happened was her mom, I'm like, how? I'm gonna be a little bit annoyed. I don't know.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I'm hoping this kind of works together a little better, but it is a little like
it's so stop and start. Like every other episode, it feels like an exposition dump instead of like a continuous, smooth, flowing story.
Yeah.
And like season one, like I was saying earlier, like the individual parts, like we've been saying this like throughout, like we think season two is better than season one, and I think most everyone is thinking that. I'm starting to like season one more personally the more I'm seeing it as a whole. Because season one had better flow to me, even though they had dumb things with the story, the flow felt better. I don't feel like season one stopped nearly as much. It just kind of like had the weird mirror universe curveball,
right?
But this season is just like stop start. I'm just like, come on, just like stop with the jerkiness. It just incoherent at times.
To me, it's like when I think of like a well-paced like series, like think of like I've been a big fan of True Detective. I think that has and that jumps around time periods. So that jumps from like, you know, like 70s or 80s and then jumps into the 90s and jumps into the 2000s. So there's different time periods and it's still paced right. Same thing with Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones, you have multiple characters, and yet the story still kind of flows along.
It's so well done, Game of Thrones.
And you get invested in each character, and you get to know each character. And like even I haven't seen the second season yet, but American Gods, same way. A lot of characters introduced, but you get enough to, you know, get an idea what the characters are about. So I think they're close to it, but I think you're right, Dave. They've been jerking around a little bit. I just wish they would just, you know, tell a continuous story instead of, you know.
And I think part of the thing is they knee-jerk reacted toward the season one where people were upset that it was too continuous, and they tried to make season two more episodic and having them more self-contained while still telling a whole story. And I think they're playing at odds with each other. Do one or the other, not both. And
yeah.
Discovery just needs to be an arc. Just do an arc a season and just make people – I mean, I don't know. People follow Game of Thrones, and Game of Thrones is way more complex than Star Trek. And they're shorter episodes. I mean, they're shorter seasons. They're only 10 episodes a season. And it's still way more complicated than Star Trek. So, I mean, from like a storytelling perspective and a number of characters, you're trying to remember a perspective. There's so much more in Game of Thrones, and they have less time because it's only 10 hours instead of 14 hours. So, I don't know. Like, Star Trek, they're not taking advantage of the platform. They're still not. I mean, some of the episodes have been a little bit longer than season one episodes, but they still, I don't think they've still pushed the hour mark except for the first episode.
And, you know, you're saying not taking advantage of the platform. The other funny thing is with all of that is that they're still thinking like regular programming guidelines, like for commercials and for everything else. It's like they're in a 1980s kind of programming for writing their show.
Yeah, I don't understand why they're constricting themselves to this TV thing unless they're trying to bring it to TV later, which is
I think they're going to. I think that's their plan.
No, you're bringing us to this platform. Use it correctly. Yeah. Don't.
I have a feeling if that's the plan. I have a feeling that they're trying to bring us to TV later.
Because, I mean, they also haven't pushed the boundaries too far with what they can show on TV. I mean, yeah, Klingon boobs, but they barely look like boobs because she's wearing so much prosthetics. Like the blood, I mean, it was a little bit graphic today with her dying and then the torture with Ash. But still, like that's still stuff that can be on TV. You know, NCIS and some of the cop shows can get pretty gruesome on regular TV now. So Discovery's not doing anything that pushes the boundary of what can be on regular daytime television either. So it's kind of like, I don't know. They're definitely not taking advantage of the platform of the time. They're still putting themselves under time constraints. I don't know. There's so many things, little things that I think could make the show a bit better. Like, you know, Aaron, you said so much was happening this episode. Like if they gave it 10 more minutes, maybe the scenes wouldn't feel so jammed, you know, maybe it would feel, maybe it could breathe a little bit more.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird. Like, as season two is going on, I'm getting less and less excited about it. I hope it gets better. Like, I hope it gets more exciting. But episode to episode, it was like some of the parts were so good. Pike was so good. You know, we're getting some great shots of the ships. They're like fixing cannon, which is great. You know, all the little mistakes they made. Like on a micro level, season two is much better. On a macro level, I'm not sure.
Yeah, right. And also, we got news too that Anson Mount isn't coming back. So this is his final season. So he's not working for CBS All Access after this.
So that's really sad. I really hope that he gets his own show because I love Pike. He is so good. Anson Mount as Pike is so good. I want to watch all the Pike show I can get because he is so good. And Peck is starting to grow on me as Spock. This episode was definitely stand out. He definitely feels more like Spock than he has in the previous episode, which is really good. He just needs a shave.
I like the beard.
I don't have a problem with it. Just it's weird because he is a Federation officer, so you'd think he'd put on a uniform and shave. So
yeah, it's weird. I don't know why he's like wearing like
he Section 31 uniform clothes. On the Enterprise.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, guys.
We have replicators, you know.
I can't help you. I left my uniform on the Enterprise.
I can't come to work today. I lost my name tag.
Yeah, there you go. I love that excuse. That's a good one.
Yeah.
So. Well, okay.
I hope it picks
we're
back
not
up.
Super thrilled with it, but at least it's connecting all the dots.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how it goes next week for shows. All right, Guy, where can we find you on the internets?
Okay, you can find me everywhere at gsdavisart.com, and I'm pretty much branded that way. And you can also find me at rockymountaingeektank.com and everywhere else.
And the whole Geek Tank was supposed to come on tonight, but they're not caught up on Star Trek, so...
Yeah,
we're
going to make lots of fun of them on that. Yeah, it was actually kind of funny because we were talking about this, and they were like, well... I don't know. I said, can you catch up? And they're like, how many episodes are there so far? And I'm like, we're on 10. They're like, oh, I'm on episode 1. And I'm like, yeah, see, you're not going to catch up in time.
Well, like, but like we planned this like weeks ago.
I know.
Weeks and weeks. Like we're on episode 2 or 3.
We're having like all kinds of backlog issues with everything. So it's just the way it goes.
Gotcha.
The way it goes.
That's a problem when you're doing multiple like geek stuff is like it's hard to cover everything because there's so much out there.
Yeah, yeah, that's part of this, yeah, is that there's just so much to cover.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah, absolutely. So with Synthaholics, you can find us online at Synthaholics.com. You can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. You can join the Facebook group at facebook.com/group/Synthaholics. We're also on YouTube for our podcast that goes up there, and sometimes we have random miscellaneous videos that'll go up as well. That's youtube.com/Synthaholics. As far as following us on Twitter, you can follow the show at Synthaholic Duo. Personally, I'm at David_J_Duncan. Holly's at Lunar Thistle. Aaron's at Blackbird 1004, and Holly has a website you should check out.
I haven't updated it in a while, but I am at HollyMichelleV.wixsite.com.
Yeah, hire her for voiceover. Yeah.
Yeah. You know you want me to narrate your next novel.
Yeah, exactly.
Very much so. And then, as well, you can go to, after you've hired Holly, of course, go to Apple iTunes, rate and review us there. That gives people a little more incentive. They see us more through the Apple algorithms. And if you can go to Patreon.com/Synthaholics, throw us a buck, maybe more. Just help us keep on sending content your way. That's very helpful. And as always, we ask if you could share this episode when you see it come through your social media thread, or tell your coworker, tell your family member, tell your best friend, tell your dog. Maybe play Synthaholics while you're away, and so the dog doesn't feel lonely.
Yeah.
That could happen.
And the dog will sometimes hear Holly's dog in the background, which happens from time to time. So and,
I mean, he's licking right now. Can you guys hear him?
No.
We
hear something.
But
I don't, things sometimes.
But I don't have dog ears, so maybe a dog could hear that over my ears. So,
well, Synthaholics listeners, your dogs can listen to my dog. How does that sound?
Yeah, exactly.
Good.
All right. Well, thank you, Guy, for joining us, and thank you, Holly and Aaron too. It's always great being with everybody.
Thank you, David.
Thanks for having me.
It was fun.
Synthaholics signing out. Goodbye, Aaron. Oh, I made Holly sad. Oh, wow.
You made Holly sad.
No.
All right, we'll live long and prosper, one and all.
Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Unless you're Arium.
Choo-choo!
Die young and fail.
Oh, man.
They turn into a train. She's like a Thomas the Tank Engine now.
Oh, God.
There's a Skyrim mod that turns the dragons into Thomas the Tank Engine.
There's what? What'd you say?
There's a Skyrim mod that turns dragons into Thomas the Tank Engine. So Thomas the Tank Engine flies to the sky and then like breathes fire on you. It's pretty awesome. I think they took down the mod, but it used to be a thing where Thomas the Tank Engine could be a dragon.
Yeah,
that's probably really weird.
Yes.
Nice.
But,
weird things happen in modding.
Yeah.
I haven't eaten yet, so I'm going to run away and go eat dinner.
Okay.
It was nice talking to you, Holly. See you later.
Yeah, it was nice talking to you guys too. Sorry, I was a little distracted because dogs in and out. And
oh, yeah.
What can you do?
Well, hell, have a good evening.
Thank you. I'll talk to you guys later.
Later.
Okay. See you later.
All right. Bye, guys.
See ya.
Bye.